Conan, that's not Timo Werner's run either. That's Thomas's Tuchel's run. He's told them to do that. Yeah. So Timo, what we've learned here is that Timo Werner can speak English and he can move his legs. That's all we've learned from that Champions League final goal.
Well, hang on. Thomas Tuchel can speak German, so we don't know if he can speak English.
This is Paul McGrath. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
Gareth Southgate, the whole of England is with you.
Coleman, a little dink into the middle.
As soon as I'm obviously on the pitch, I'm just, at my happiest.
Yeah, I never win something for Portugal national team, but I win tonight.
He can't take it, can he? He can't take it. He just can't take it because we've out-tacticked him, we've outwitted him.
You're playing international football. You're playing international football. Control the bloody ball. Pass it and move to your mates. And if you lose it, run back. And run back like you care.
Harry Kane has been involved in this tournament for about an hour of football across four games. And you know who was playing alongside him? Super Jack Grealish. That's right, Liam, I found the angle. You know, Gareth Southgate might be succeeding in this tournament, but by God, we are going to find the angle. And let's be honest, a week is a long time in football. Since we were last speaking, Alvaro Morata has turned into a cool finisher, a dead-eye finisher. And the group of death, Germany, France, Portugal, gone, all in the last 16. But like Jack Grealish, you're speaking afterwards, like, you know, we've said everything there is to say about Jack Grealish and his impact on any team, but the energy of him, just even after a game, you know, in an interview, before games and interviews, he just has a great aura around him, a great positive vibe. The way he plays football, he has a smile on his face all the time. He's so confident in a really nice way. He's so calm in a really cool way. And, you know, they're asking him about his performance, basically, and has he worked his way into it. Like, how many times does Jack Grealish have to play well and other people then ask, has he done enough to start? It's like, the answer is always yes, he has done enough to start. And I think it sums him up when he was talking about the goal he assisted. He was very quick to remind everybody that he played a part in the first goal as well, which he did, but, like, you know, he was saying, thought I played well, like, you know, which was good because when I first came on, I was slipping all over the place. I didn't know what was going on, but he got the grips of it. And then he mentioned that assist. He said, I was actually going to shoot. I was going to get it onto my left and shoot. And then I saw Hitch, so I gave it to him. And if you look at the replay, like in slow motion, as he's winding up, he's about to shoot. So he just sees Harry Kane in the splittest of a split second and decides to play a pinpoint cross instead of his left foot onto his head. And like, that's what he does. He makes these decisions in real time all the time. And it's almost like it's a good idea to play him. What do you think?
Yeah. Like, the way he shifted his body for that, it had me fooled. I was certain he was going to shoot, and I thought that was the big moment. I thought that was going to be the moment that would make this podcast enjoyable for English fans. Let's be honest here. England have scored four goals in this tournament. Jack Grealish has assisted two of them, and his decision-making and little shifting of his weight that makes the room for Shaw to assist a third. And he's only played 110 minutes, maybe. 68 of them because Mason Mount gave Billy Gilmour a hug. Like, this is what Grealish does and why Southgate is a cunt. I don't care if England win the Euros and the World Cup. Southgate will have been wrong.
Oh, 100%. Like, this is what we said all along. Like, you know, it's hard to argue is the prevailing point, you know, when the team is winning. But, like, that's the options England have. Like, that's why England are tournament favourites. Nobody should be getting away from that. And I'm not just trying to sort of take away from the victory now. What we said all along was it can be way easier for them to win if they, A, pick their best players, and B, play in a way that suits those best players. And, you know, picking Jack really should be the starting point. It's so simple. Like, it's not just because we're Villa fans anymore. Grealish talked about all those fans at Wembley who usually boo him every week. And he's delighted to hear them singing. And like, because they're singing his name, he wants to pay them back with goals and assists. And he said, hopefully my goal's not too far away. That's the way Grealish thinks about football. And that's why the fans are singing his name. There's no, like, we went through the list of reasons last week. It's pathetic, like, the list of reasons for people suggesting why Jack Grealish should be, or why people want Jack Grealish in the team, and all these journalists and all the people in the media, you know, rhyming them off, like, you know, name it, hard work, racism, everything from hard work to racism. Like, this is why people want the Jack Grealish in the team, apparently. That's what he brings you. And you're right to mention Luke Shaw. It was the same. It was the same against Czech Republic. It wasn't a coincidence that England's fullbacks are suddenly involved in the game when Jack Grealish is there. And the two goals, Shaw to Grealish, goal. Grealish to Shaw, goal. Like, you know, he brings these boys into it more often. He gives them a platform. He holds the ball for longer. Like, how little he's played, with how little he's played, he has produced the most runs in the final third, like progressive carries. He's travelled into the box more than anybody, and he's hardly even played. And what he does is he just lights up everybody else around him, and he lights up my heart. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, I was hoping England would lose there. Let's be honest, we're Irish, but we're Irish, and Jack Grealish hasn't been playing, and we've got a lot of history of criticising Southgate now as well. So it would be easier. It would be easier to do these podcasts if they did fucking lose, but it is, like, it's hard to root against a Jack Grealish team, and it's always good because they've got them in the sweepstick.
Yeah, look, and I'm in a WhatsApp group, obviously, and somebody just texted in whenever Jack Grealish flashed up on the screen saying, a lot of Villa fans at Wembley today, Liam, and I just text back, football fans, that this is what they want. Yeah. They want Jack Grealish. Anybody who appreciates the sport wants Jack Grealish on the pitch. And England could have breezed through these games. Like, they have the talent, and I would find it very hard to go against them, go against willing them to lose. Like, I would take the soup, Conan. I would drink it until I was fucking sick if England just let themselves be free. And, like, I hope it's needless for me to point out that I have no problem with the teams devising pragmatic approaches to winning football matches. But pragmatism doesn't have to mean dogging out a win.
Yeah.
And there's nothing pragmatic about going against the grain, working so hard against the natural inclinations and talents of your squad.
Yeah.
And pragmatism doesn't mean looking at what you have and saying, ah, you know what, fuck that. Give me Maguire and Trippier and Rice and Phillips. Like, I have no problem with teams doing that. I have no problem with Tony Pulis's Stoke City asking peak Arsene Wenger's Arsenal, or trough Arsene Wenger's Arsenal, asking them, how big is your stomach? What's your appetite for the fight here? Because that's what they have to do. They have to outcompete them because they can't outplay them. Cesc Fabregas is better than Ricardo Fuller and Glenn Whelan. I don't care what you say, Conan. But, like, you know, Tony Pulis didn't have Foden, Mount, Sterling, Kane, Saka, or Jack fucking Grealish. Do you know who did? Steve Bruce. Steve Bruce had Jack Grealish, Abraham and McGinn in the championship, and he couldn't figure out what to do with him. And I hounded him out because I knew if you put Jack Grealish together with an actual football manager, they would just breeze through the championship.
Yeah.
The same way this England team should be breezing through this competition.
So that brings us all nicely to Declan Rice's interview afterwards. There were a few interesting interviews after the game, and Declan Rice's was especially fascinating because he's somebody who's just clearly on social media too much for somebody who's involved in a tournament. And, like, one of the first things he said was, you know, a lot of people are writing us off, or they had written us off after the group stage. And, like, that's a good win today, right? Beating Germany is good in a knockout game. Like, that's exactly what we were saying England need to do. Like, we will talk later about the actual threat of Germany and, you know, how big an achievement this is, but we had said, like, you know, England can't just keep coming up against a decent team and that's automatically them failing. So, like, you know, beating Germany is good. It's par for the course. It's at most par for the tournament favourites. So, like, that's what Declan Rice needs to realise when he's talking about people had written us off. They were criticising the team because they were playing terribly against a bad Croatia team and a worse Czech Republic team, I would say. And then he also went on to say, Raheem Sterling has proven so many people wrong. This is an interesting one. Sterling, I think, is in the spotlight a lot, but for the same reasons that I'm mentioning, for the same reasons we're talking about Jack Grealish. Like, Sterling was terrible against Scotland. There's no getting away from that. there was nothing unfair about the criticism that he got. Well, from what I saw, anyway, I'm sure there was unfair criticism somewhere along the way. But performance-wise, he was bad. And it was terrible that they weren't playing Grealish, that they weren't releasing Foden a bit more, that Sancho was just consigned to basically shouldn't be there. And like, that's why Sterling was coming under heat. Sterling has scored a few goals, but even tonight, like, I would say Saka and Grealish were better than him overall. Again, you can't get away from the output. He's got 3 goals in 4 games. That's great. Rio Ferdinand said, "Can we please start putting some respect on Raheem Sterling's name?" Like, people respect Raheem Sterling, but this is an England team with an embarrassment of riches. That's the problem. And if you're not playing well, even Harry Kane is under threat. Like, that's what people are saying. Harry Kane, should he be playing any longer? That's what happens when you've got a team this good. And that's what was happening with Sterling. I think that, like, some of the pushback to what's been written or said about people like Sterling is a bit too much.
Yeah, definitely. And you can play badly and you know, you might get away with it, especially if you're someone of Raheem Sterling's stature, someone who's been so good for so long. But Sterling's problem is that there's so many good players waiting to come in. That's all this is based on. He was playing shit, and there were players there that to take his place. And the Saka was very good again tonight. But I thought Sterling was actually England's best player. He was dangerous. He was adventurous, and he was on his fucking own until Jack Grealish came on. Really, I thought. I mean, he had nobody to play with until that moment, apart from the ghost of Kane's past. Like, it was. It was pathetic from the rest of the team. I thought he was the only one who was trying things. He was carrying the threat, but he would just be carrying it, and there'd be nobody there with him, nobody on the same wavelength, no one else making those breaking runs into the box. It was tough for him tonight.
Yeah.
But he was good tonight. He was much, much better tonight, and he deserved his goal in the end, because whenever Grealish came on, Sterling came alive.
You see, maybe that's the problem. I'm looking at that, the problem in that he didn't have any help. Like, I was watching a lot of his runs thinking, this guy just runs and runs and runs until something happens. Like, you know, and it's admirable in a way, and a lot of the times it's dangerous, but most of the time he just eventually runs out of the road into someone. And obviously he doesn't have any options. Like, that chance that Kane got, we'll talk about that in more detail, but before halftime, like, that was just Sterling running and running and not making a decision. I was almost frustrated at his, what I thought was just inability to make the right decision at that clutch time, and he just ran into a tackle and bobbled off an other defender who was coming in, and it sat up for Kane. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe he didn't have enough help. And, like, obviously I'm a big fan of Sterling, and he's sharper than anybody I've seen on a pitch. Like, the way the 1-2s he plays at City are just devastating. Maybe Sterling is good after all. maybe Rio Ferdinand's on to something.
But like, England were playing with 7 backs, yeah, and Saka was being worked like a dog, and Harry Kane hasn't turned up to the tournament. Like, you know, Sterling was out doing it on his own. I thought it was really tough for him tonight, and I was watching him just to make sure that I hadn't been overly critical of him, because I was desperate for Jack Grealish to get on, and he was good tonight and definitely deserved to stay on the pitch.
Coming up, we're going to talk about this game. England 2, Germany 0.
I burst onto the scene, didn't I? And I was going to be the next best thing.
Oh, who was it that said? There was an interview with somebody recently, and they said that he's always positive. It was Micah Richards.
Hold on, I played for England at 18, youngest ever defender to play for England.
It was Micah Richards. He was talking on Sky Sports, and he said he's always positive. Sometimes you wish he wasn't as positive. Like, he almost he said he was too nice.
Right.
What do you think, lad?
I think Micah Richards should shut the fuck up. What the fuck has Micah Richards ever done for Aston Villa? Dean Smith got Aston Villa promoted from 14th in the championship. Micah Richards was just there collecting 40 grand a week while that was all happening.
He's just brilliant. He's just top. What a guy to work with, you are, honestly.
We're going to start with the Ronnie Rosenthal Award. A lot in the first half. Most of them in the first half, actually. The first one, Harry Maguire's header. That was bad. You expect big slab head to be putting that away. Like that's what Harry Maguire 2018 was doing all along. Just getting on the end of a cross and putting it away. But God, he looked like he'd never headed a ball before when that just 50p'd off him. It was Courtney Howes-esque.
Yeah, it was so bad. He has to score there, I think. There's a little bit of pressure from Gosens, but Maguire's head weighs more than that, lad. Get him out of the way. Get your big slab on it and give your country the lead. That's the moment.
Yeah. And do you know what? That was actually the second. There was one that he had a header from about 12 yards out that he headed straight at the keeper as well.
Pushing it back to Neuer, yeah.
Yeah, completely free. And he looked like he freaked out. I thought it was the plan. Everybody broke away from him. And yep. Left him free, and he freaked out with all the space, and you could see him shuffling his feet, looking around. He's like, "What are you like? Relax, the ball's been crossed in."
Yeah,
he got
a bit of Theo Walcott's, didn't he? Too much time to think. Last thing you want to give those lads.
You mentioned Gosens, not getting to that ball. Lovely cross from Kimmich. You know, I know Walker and Trippier are there, putting them under a bit of pressure. Get to the fucking ball and score. It's an open net for you. Like Pickford's not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, it's Kimmich's cross is delicious, and I just don't know if he goes for it aggressively enough.
It doesn't.
You said it there, and it's there for him. There's a bit of pressure, but he gets between the two lads, and then he kind of stops. It's I don't know what he was doing. That was hard to watch.
Timo Werner, like you know, Kai Havertz getting into that pocket all day. Like, where were England's two centre defensive midfielders? Well, this boy, every time I looked up, the number 7 of Germany was just floating around in the position where you want one defensive midfielder, never mind two of them. And he just had all the joy in the world, just threading balls through. And he put Werner through. I think it's a decent save from Pickford. It's a good save from Pickford. But like, he hasn't hit it low or high. He's sat it up for Pickford's arse to save it, basically. And it was just typical Werner, wasn't it?
Look, if Timo Werner gets the ball in your box, the only thing you have to worry about as a defender is getting yourself free to receive the ball from the keeper. I mean, this lad is a clown. He has to lift that ball.
Yeah.
Even 12 inches off the ground and it's a goal. But no, Timo has different ideas. He waits for Pickford actually commits himself. He throws himself on the ground. It's a centre forward's dream. But he just hits it off him. He's a joke. This guy is done. He's up there with Shevchenko. This is one of the worst signings of all time. He's an absolute clown.
Well, I don't know what it is about the Chelsea jersey. Like Shevchenko is one and Torres is the other. Like he carries himself like Torres now. Like a Chelsea Torres, I mean. His body language is dreadful. It looks like he thinks he's shit. It looks like he thinks he's being talked about as he's playing.
Knows he's shit.
Yeah. And like he looks like he does. It looks like he wants to come off all the time. And every time he has a chance, he feels sorry for himself. It's like, oh no, I have to go through all this again. And everybody's going to watch the replays of it. Everybody's going to say I should have scored. And and I just can't do it. But they keep asking me to do it. That's what it looks like. It's going through his head. He's a fucking supposed to be a lethal striker.
Yeah, and like you're right to mention the first 10 minutes, it was just so easy for Germany. They were just picking up the ball between the lines, running straight through the middle, right through the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
But England, they settled under the game after that. But luckily for them, it was Timo Werner who was up top for Germany. He's so bad. And because he's quick, he gets free and people think that's enough.
Yeah,
he's playing centre forward. Yeah. Being able to run is the absolute bare minimum, I would have thought.
Isn't it a bit sad that so many people were fawning over his run, remember, in the Champions League final for Havertz's goal? He basically ran out of the way. He made a decoy run. Like, let me tell you, I am the best decoy runner in the world.
But Conan, that's not Timo Werner's run either. That's Thomas's Tuchel's run. He's told him to do that.
Yeah.
So Timo, what we've learned here is that Timo Werner can speak English. And he can move his legs. That's all we've learned from that Champions League final goal.
Well, hang on. Thomas Tuchel can speak German, so we don't know if he can speak English. But like, It's a basic thing. Like, he wants your forward moving, and he moved. He moved into a channel where he wasn't going to receive the ball. Havertz made the better run. He ran into the space. It was vacated, and Mount played the pass to him. The only thing that I thought was noteworthy from all the stills and slow-mos of that replay, of that goal, was that Diaz felt the need to follow Werner. He vacated centre-back to run after Werner. Jesus, if Werner gets the ball down the left wing, what the fuck might happen? Nothing will happen. Let him go. Let him have it.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like, you know, the centre-back should never be going out there anyway, but also know who you're playing against. Like, you know, adjust your game for that. If it's Timo Werner, it's grand.
The last of the first half, Harry Kane's first touch. They were suggesting maybe he could have put it away on his left. Like, it just make the touch better. Like, the idea was right, get it onto your right. You'll have given the keeper the shoulders, or drop the shoulder on him, and you have an open net. And the touch is just purr. It's a great slide tackle clearance from Hummels. But in fairness to Harry Kane, it was probably his first touch of the game. It was actually his ninth, I think, which is pathetic in 45 minutes. But that's the one I mentioned. Sterling just running into a tackle, and it bobbled up and it came to Kane, and just a first touch of a striker who's low on confidence, I would say.
Yeah, and it is, you're right to say, it's a really good clearance from Hummels, and he does particularly well to get it behind Saka as well. But it's absolutely dreadful from Kane. You've said both things there. I mean, first of all, he is so close to goal. Just hit it with your left on the half volley. Smash it. It's so easy. Or even just trickle it. Neuer's fucked. Like, you can't save it. You're too close to the nets. Get the ball on target, slightly to the side of Neuer, and it's a goal. But if you are going to take a touch, then take a fucking touch. That is just desperate. It's just, this is elite level football. You should be able to control the football. There's no pace on it. It was a terrible from Harry Kane, who's having an absolute stinker.
And the only other one I have is Thomas Muller running straight through. And one of those ones where it felt like he had so much time to bask in what was happening. Like, you rarely see that. Like, you're starting to give the ball away. Havertz again plays him through. And you're there, like, watching this event unfold in slow motion. And, like, I still remember everything that was happening during that time. And, you know, I remember thinking, come on, Muller. Like, it's Muller. This will be good. And he pulls it wide. Like, I thought he was going to go to the other side. And then the replays made it look worse. It was like Pickford had left, like, both sides open. Like, there was actually, I was wondering why he went to the left. And it was like, well, because Pickford actually left a lot of space down that left. I thought the easy finish was just curling that round on the outside. Pickford was so far out of his goals. He had so much time. Like, he had burned Stones and Maguire. It was actually Walker who was furthest away, who got there nearest him. And he tries to pull it inside, and he should still score that, and he's pulled it wide. But of course, the BBC commentary was quick to give Pickford all the praise for that.
Yeah, no, I think he did the right thing. When you're under pressure in a big moment, you always go across your body. It's the easier strike of the ball. You can just trust it more. You do it more often on the pitch. But that was the chance. And I was so happy when I realised it was Muller that was through.
Yeah.
When I realised Werner had already been hooked. It was the man you want. It was the man you want for the big moment, bearing down on goal. And unfortunately, like you say, Kyle Walker came running in from my nightmares, roaring past Stones and getting there before Maguire as well. Both of them had about 15 yards head start on him. And he forced Muller to take it slightly earlier than I'm sure Muller would have liked, but he still has to score. It's the moment.
What do you have as the winner? I think it's actually, they're 1-0 down. Like, that is the moment, as you say. That changes the game. England were panicking around that stage as well. Like, they could have actually gone on and won it. That was the one.
That's the biggest moment of the match, without a doubt. But for Ronnie Rosenthal Award, you can't look much further than a centre forward missing from 5 yards out.
That's fair. Well done, Timo Werner, on another Ronnie Rosenthal Award. Gareth Southgate, the whole of England is with you, Meter. 7 defensive players. This England team, this England squad, Gareth Southgate is the benefactor of England's best team in living memory, best options in living memory, and he's picked 7 defensive players against a Germany team who, let's face it, they're not at Germany level. I'm not going to take away from the win, but it's not Germany of 7 years ago. It's a poor Germany side who were almost, who were 6 minutes away from being put out by Hungary. Like, that's who they could have been playing, 6 minutes, you know, to spare. And, you know, I don't know what it is about, I don't know if you call it a 3-4-3, a 5-3-2 or whatever. Like, you know, I'm not even talking about England's setup at the minute, but everyone always feels the need to match up against teams who play wing-backs, and that's what Southgate definitely felt the need to do. I would say Neville and Jose Mourinho also echoed those sentiments, like, with their team lineups during the week, but they're also just have a disposition to be really negative and really frightened. And there you have it. Like, you know, of all those options, he's picked five defenders. He's picked Phillips and Rice, and he's even picked Saka, who's a good player, but, like, you know, ultimately he's a wing back, really.
Yeah, it was pathetic, really. I mean, if you're playing three centre midfielders or three centre backs, you can't get away with playing those two centre midfielders.
No.
I mean, what planet are you on? That's unforgivable stuff. And they were dreadful as well.
Yeah.
Like, I mentioned before, and you've mentioned it, Havertz was just picking up the ball for fun, just running through the middle. And it was just I was going to say running between or getting in between the lines, but there were no lines. It was like, it was eight players and Harry Kane and Sterling up top. That was it. There was just nothing there. I mean, to play that many defenders across what was supposed to be a midfield and for them to not be there was just bizarre stuff. And to be fair to England, though, I think they really settled into it after those initial minutes. They did get shifted into a 3-4-3 on the ball quickly, and they were aggressive in their passing and getting it forward into that three. But to be fair, you'd be looking to bypass that middle four as much as possible.
Yeah,
and Germany really enabled it as well. I mean, Germany were so sloppy on the ball; it was just bouncing off them. It was bad from Germany. I the game could have been a lot better. It nearly developed into a good game if both teams just weren't so bad on the ball once they got into the attacking third. I mean, think about this referee as well. I mean, like, what happened? What had to happen for those German players to realize that the ref had to whistle sellotape to his mouth? And they could just not resist having a nibble. And it was foul after foul. It was such a messy game in that middle third. And if they both weren't so stacked in the back line and so blunt an attack, we could have had a cracker.
I heard you say Tony Pulis earlier on, when England were especially bad in the first 10 minutes. And, like, yeah, they did settle down and stuff, but I didn't think they were great either for most of the first half. I thought about Tony Pulis because I thought, like, England are just becoming set-piece merchants. You know, they're going to be a threat because they have so many good defenders. And they've got good players who can play good balls into the box. That's what their biggest threat is going to become. And then, unbelievably, I can't believe that I'm thinking about these two managers when I'm watching this England team. I thought of Ian Holloway. I thought of his 5-4-1 Blackpool team.
Like, Black Balls was fine, Connor.
Like, this is what I'm thinking when I'm watching Gareth Southgate's England in that first half. Because for a large period, it was nothing like a 3-4-3. It was 5-4-1 with Saka and Sterling having to do a lot of defending. And then, you know, again, I've said this before, but whatever Harry Kane was doing as well. Like, and they were just so slow to come out of that. And then, yeah, in fairness, they did come out of it. And they were helped by, I think, the performance of the three centre-backs in, like, Maguire and Walker especially were stepping up well and winning ball back. And, like, this made it all the more pointless for these two holding midfielders. I don't remember them. Yeah, you said Germany were bad. Were they needed at any stage? Like, I don't know. I can't think, though, why they would have been there. Because Maguire and Walker and Stones were just stepping out and winning the ball back. So, like, what is the role of those two boys? You're just taking away from someone else up top. You have five defenders. They're all good. Relax.
Well, the role was to stop Havertz from getting on the ball.
Yeah.
That tells you everything you need to know about Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips' performance. Like, Havertz was easily Germany's best player. He was the only player that was offering anything for them.
The Gareth Southgate whole thing in his meter or his wish you meter again, that was going down, seven defensive players. I don't know if this is going up or down. Bukayo Saka, I thought he was good, but again, I'm just thinking about the options. You know, and it's frustrating. Like, think of the hoops that Grealish has had to jump through. Like, you know, and the stuff that he's been told to do to get into this England team and work his way in. And every time he plays, he's man of the match, and we're still asking, you know, is he going to, has he done enough to start the next game? Like, Saka plays one good game, a very good game against Czech Republic, and bang, he's in because he's with a quote-unquote top six club. They're obviously not a top six club. Mikel Arteta is your manager. But, you know, so Saka's straight in. Fine, good player again, not getting at him, but left out is Foden, is Grealish, is Mount. And I was wondering, like, on top of the seven defensive players that are named, I heard a lot of English journalists about Grealish a couple of weeks ago saying that the feeling in the changing room is that the players think Gareth Southgate doesn't trust Grealish's defensive ability, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's, so this is what the players are obviously telling these journalists. And I thought, that's interesting, because obviously they're thinking, what the fuck? Why is Grealish not playing? So they're having to justify it some way by saying, well, it must be because of this. And they're guessing, why is Grealish not playing? And now, when Foden, Grealish, and Mount are left out, Saka's thrown in. There's seven defensive players. I keep reiterating that. There has to be eyeballs flying around the changing room when he's naming this team. And he's skipping over Foden, and he's skipping over Grealish, and he's skipping over Mount. And, you know, and he's going with the lineup that he's going with. There has to be a bit of chat about this. You know, people starting to raise their eyebrows.
Yeah, but I, to be honest, I don't think there would be, because a lot of people aren't that bright. I mean, they'll just see that Saka played well the last game, and that's enough. They won't bother going back to the fact that Grealish always plays well for Aston Villa and for England. That doesn't matter. Saka played well, so he's justified to be in the team. They won't bother making the connection that Jack Grealish plays well, but for some reason he's not justified to be in the team.
So I think I'm going to put that down on the meter, not too far, but and not getting at Saka, but just getting at the overall frustration. Like, you know, for Grealish to get in a squad initially, like, you know, I'd say a year overdue for when it definitely should have happened. He got in because Rashford got injured, pulled out late to the squad, he pulled Grealish in, got man of the match. You know, but now they're at the tournament and he's not playing him, and he's been told he needs to do this and that and this and that, and then Saka just jumps straight in ahead of him and Grealish comes on and changes the game for England. So yeah, that's going down. Also going down, Kieran Trippier. Like, again, not getting at him, but like, Kyle Walker is enough. Like, you don't need that extra right back to help out to watch Gosens. Walker can keep an eye on him. And also just thought it was interesting that they're going back to wing backs, and they have two of the Champions League winning wing backs in reserve, Chilwell and James. But they've overlooked the two of them. Like, again, Shaw is obviously grand, but they've overlooked James and brought in Trippier of all of them. And like, this is now a third player he's played at right back. It's bizarre stuff. A third player in four games.
You guys got to use them all. he played Trent Alexander in the last warm up game as well. Yeah. It's mental. And the strangest thing about it is, as grand as Trippy is, Reece James is on a different level. He's a much, much superior player. Reece James is brilliant defensively, so strong, so fast, and he's incredible technique and vision on the ball. He's just a much more rounded player than Kieran Trippy. But, you know, you just can't trust him. You just can't trust that Champions League winning right back, because he hasn't played in a tournament in which England didn't play any good teams, except for the teams that beat them.
Going up, they beat Germany 2-0, in fairness. And that is basically the first point of going up, beating Germany. How far should this be going up on the meter?
Not far at all. I mean, let's be very clear here about this Germany team. I mean, the last tournament they were in, they went out in the group stage. In this one, they had to come from behind twice and needed to score in the last 6 minutes against Hungary to limp over the line. This is a Hungarian side that warmed up for the tournament by failing to beat Ireland. Germany's last competitive game before the Euros was a home defeat to North Macedonia. 7 months ago, they lost to Spain. 6-0.
Jesus.
Like, they had to beg Hummels and Müller to come back 2 weeks before the tournament, after they were just inexplicably retired by the manager, not for football reasons, just because it was time to move on. Yeah. Apparently, I mean, let their ability tell you it's time to move on. Let Timo Werner tell you if you can move on from Thomas Muller. But having to ask them back on the eve of the tournament tells you a lot about this team. And this Germany team is done. They've been finished under this management team for 3 years. They've been a walking corpse. And they're still strong enough on paper, other than the glaring absence of a centre forward. But, you know, Yogi Löw has had an incredible record of finals and semi-finals to go along with his World Cup. But he's finished with his team.
Yeah,
he's just a crotch-sniffing weirdo who's lingered along too long, like the smell on his fingertips.
Yeah, and I think that record you mentioned is the reason why, like, you know, Hansi Flick is coming in. Get him in. Like, the team is in need of a change. You've got a great manager who you've confirmed is coming in to take over the team. But, you know, out of respect to Love, they basically sacrificed this tournament and England. Yeah, England gladly benefited from it. Final one going up on the meter. They haven't conceded in 4 games. Harry Maguire, another interesting interview afterwards. Yeah, you know, a lot of these players like have a chip on their shoulder. Maybe that's a good thing, I don't know. But, you know, Harry Maguire doesn't need a chip on his shoulder on behalf of Jordan Pickford. And he talked about, like, you know, we've got a lot of good defenders. He's right there. And he said they have a good goalkeeper as well. And he said, with the scrutiny the Premier League gets, every goal gets analysed and people pick up on the slightest things. Yeah, they pick up on mistakes that lead to goals. And they do that about the best defenders. Like, that's the fucking deal. And if you can't cope with that, you end up at Watford. And if you can't cope with that, you go further down the divisions. Like, that's how it works. Like, you know, that's why people pick up on these things. You're conceding goals and you're not supposed to be. Obviously, like, there's probably a bit of a personal bite back from him on that as well. Like, you know, considering how much scrutiny he gets too. But yeah, but, like, you know, overall 4 games they haven't conceded. They are looking strong and tight, which is their overall aim of the setup.
Yeah, of course. If you play 7 defenders, you can expect to not concede very many goals, especially whenever you're playing against teams that aren't very good.
Yeah.
Like, Germany don't have a forward player. Thomas Muller there might as well get out his fucking Zimmer frame when he was bearing down on goal. He couldn't have been moving any slower. Kyle Walker was 60 yards away and he got there at the same time as Muller to the edge of the box. I don't know what Timo Werner is. Serge Gnabry might as well have not come on. That was just a waste of everybody's time. Germany are shite.
Oh, look, we'll pause, get our breath back, take a quick break, and we'll see you in a second. The Gary Neville Maguire is England's most important player worst take award. Gary Neville is absolutely buzzing today. He has just tweeted in a state of delirium. Our manager knows what he's doing. He's put a lot of eggs in this basket. In fairness, just like we put them on the other basket. So maybe we should just respect each other now at this stage. Gareth Southgate said a lot of stuff he's going to regret. We've, you know, maybe pushed it sometimes as well. I don't think we have. Fuck Gary Neville.
No, we definitely haven't. Gary Neville can go fuck himself. Gary Neville is Don Revy and we are Brian Clough. We want to win as well. We just want to do it right.
Yeah. And you know what? History will be kind to us. More kind to us. First nomination for the Worst Take Award. Oliver Holt tweeted before the game. Portugal, quote unquote, had a go, end quote, against Germany. Portugal went for it. Germany played them off the park. Sometimes it feels like we're addicted to heroic failure. Where do you start with this one? You know, Hungary went for it as well against Germany, and they had a lot of success. But you remember when England underwent this overhaul to develop, you know, better, more technical players that they were crying out for decades? Now these players are here and they're better than anybody could have ever hoped for, and there are more of them than anybody could ever have dreamed of. And people like Oliver Holt have just immediately, before we've even tried them out, they filed him into the heroic failure category. You know, by playing these players, like, that's what you're asking for. as if the safest bet is sticking to the same mentality that required that overhaul in the first place. You know, Oliver Hull thinks like that's stupid. Carry on playing your best players, the people that England were prescribed, the players that they needed all along, and now they're here. He's saying, no, let's just you know, we know what we're doing. We're English. We'll stick to the English way. Like, we don't want any heroic failures around here. How about some victories? Like, that's what these players will help bring. But bad take from old Ollie.
Yeah, I mean, there's been hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds put into developing these players, of developing the whole infrastructure around having a football team to be proud of. And there's been hundreds and hundreds of column inches dedicated by plonkers like Oliver Holt demanding this change, demanding precisely this. And now that it's here, it's just all too real for them.
Yeah.
And there's just this, because of the coward who is in charge, there is just this fetishization of pragmatism. But like I said, it isn't pragmatic to play like this if you have to pick Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice. Spain are pragmatic. They keep the ball. That's another way to be pragmatic.
Yeah.
If you beat the other team off the park, they can't beat you. You don't have to just cling on against them.
Yeah.
And you really do have to be realistic about how bad this Germany team are. France made them look good, but that's because Didier Deschamps has gone up this blind alley of thinking that he has to play like this. Didier Deschamps had a really successful World Cup, but again, it's the same way that England are going to have a successful Euros. It's because of the players, and it's in spite of the manager.
Yeah. You go back and look at the amount of goals France actually scored in that knockout phase, a lot of the time when they were forced to do it. You know, the players had to come out and play the way we talk about it with England sometimes when they go behind, or, you know, that's when good players react. United, that's the example that we used. You know, they're not coached well. They go behind. The good players come out because they're pissed off being behind against lesser opposition. The more pragmatic thing, surely, is playing players like Jack Grealish who can help create two goals. Like, scoring two goals is way more pragmatic than drawing 0-0. You know, like that's the best way of going about it. That's the most practical thing you can do in a tournament. Play players who can win games. And it's not a risk. It showed there tonight. Bring on Grealish and you score.
Well, you've shown that in the Allard game as well. You bring on Grealish and you'll create more chances. It's not a fucking surprise. I mean, this whole approach would have made a lot more sense during the 2018 World Cup. But during the 2018 World Cup, Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard were playing in front of Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson was playing on his own in midfield.
Yeah.
This is a different team.
Yeah, that's 100%. Second nomination. Jurgen Klinsmann yet again comparing Harry Maguire to Lucio. We've slagged Harry Maguire enough defensively, or not even defensively, just about how Gary Neville sees him as this Thor-like leader. But Klinsmann, in fairness to Gary Lineker, I was glad he did ask him to sort of elaborate on why he called Harry Maguire a Mustang, and I mean, like, you know, the wild horses, not a fucking the car Mustang, like these powerful wild horses, like, you know, that's what Klinsmann referred to Harry Maguire as. And he said, yeah, because he reminds him of Lucio, a player that he used to manage, and the way he just strides through the middle of the field when he gets bored. It's like, when has Harry Maguire ever done that? When Harry Maguire is venturing forward with the ball, it always looks perilous. You know, like, it's always a case of, like, fucking hell, get rid of this ball, like, you know, or do not lose it because you're not going to get back. you can definitely see why Klinsmann's managerial career and director career wasn't too successful.
Like, Harry Maguire from time to time will strike the ball quite cleanly and he'll play it through the lines quite well.
Yeah.
But he's an £80 million centre half. Of course he will do that every once in a while. He's not fucking Lucio. Jesus Christ. But it's a weird comparison as well, because Lucio wasn't particularly great. I mean, like, if you're going to make a comparison like that, pick somebody who was brilliant. You call him Thiago Silva or something, like, they'll be calling him fucking Lucio.
Yeah. Maybe I'm being too harsh on Klinsmann here. Maybe he's nailed on. Maybe he's nailed it, sorry.
But like Harry Maguire, you're right to say it looks perilous. It's so stupid for so many reasons because he's quite awkward and clumsy on the ball.
Yeah.
And if he loses it, he's not getting back. You know, this isn't the same as Roberto Carlos taking the piss up in the wing and losing the ball. It's grand. He'll get back. He can run 100 metres in 10 seconds.
Marcelo, Kyle Walker.
Exactly. Like this, Harry Maguire dandering into the middle field is just alarm bells ringing.
I can just hear the opposition players. Let him have it. Let him have it.
Well, who was it against? Was it against Chelsea where he wandered out into the pitch and he tried to run around in a circle?
Yeah, Chelsea.
Like, trying to run around in a circle, controlling the ball. The circle had a radius of about 20 metres and at no point was he in control of that football. Yeah. And then he finally gets a bit of composure. The Chelsea player is so confused by what is happening here that he gives him a second to breathe and he just hooks it out to fucking Ben Chilwell.
Speaking of Chelsea, good segue. Last nomination for the Worst Take Award. I'm remembering Harry Redknapp's appearance on TalkSport when Frank Lampard was in his dying days as Chelsea manager, and Harry Redknapp came on to launch a staunch defence of his nephew and lambasted their transfer activity. Lampard didn't want the Germans, did he? He didn't ask for the Germans. The only good player there is Ben Chilwell. That's the only good signing they've made. These other two Germans, I don't know. I don't know about them. The two Germans are talking about Werner and Havertz. One of which he got right.
One of which he got right. One of which he got monumentally wrong. I mean, Jesus Christ, where do you start with this? It didn't matter even if the Germans were shite. There was more than enough quality in that Chelsea squad, as we subsequently saw, and was plainly obvious to everyone. Apart from Frank Lampard's fucking family members. Why the fuck are Sky Sports interviewing an uncle about the job his nephew is doing?
It was Sky and Talk Sport, by the way.
But to be honest, like, what's more worrying is that they're interviewing a purported football expert and he doesn't know who Kai Havertz is. The Germans. This is the hottest prospect in European football. I mean, Frank Lampard didn't want him. He needs to be sacked for that alone.
Yeah, that would be enough reason to pull him in after that interview, play it for him, and be like,
Frank, this isn't true, is it?
Yeah. Either this isn't true, right? If it's not true, good. That's good. But your uncle doesn't know who Kai Havertz is? You're right. Get the fuck out. Maybe we should give that award to Harry Redknapp, just in the spirit of how good Havertz was. Questions we can't answer, but probably will. Does any country get as excited as English fans do about throw-ins? I remember covering an NFL game. I went over on it. I got a press pass for a free trip, basically. But it was in Wembley, and it was 49ers against Jacksonville Jaguars, and boys were being interviewed afterwards, like, you know, what do you think of the London crowd, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, yeah, you know, you guys are sort of celebrating field goals and stuff like that. We don't really do that. You know, for them, a field goal is a failure. Like, and I just thought a lot. Like, you know, it's only England where you get everybody on their feet and the raucous noise when the ball trickles out for a throw-in 30 metres out. You know, it means that the other team are getting back. You now have the ball in your hands. You have to transfer that to somebody's foot to get it under control again and start from there. It's not a big fucking... Like, the days of Rory Delap are pretty much gone. You know, like, it's not a chance. It's just a ball further up the pitch, and it's grim that's what people get excited about.
We've come from full circle. We've come back to Tony Pulis. I mean, maybe that stadium is just absolutely full of West Brom and Stoke fans. It is weird. It is pathetic. I mean, like, yeah, fine. Celebrate your team. You forced the fullback to kick the ball out of play, and now they've been able to reset their defense. I mean, maybe they just don't understand football, or maybe they just really appreciate Harry Kane's ability to launch the ball.
How disappointed were you at Mbappe pretending to be injured after he missed from Paul Pogba's three ball?
That was utterly pathetic. That was utterly pathetic. I was watching that with somebody who doesn't understand football, and I was just like, no. He is absolutely pretending to be injured there. Yeah. It was terrible. You don't pull a calf strain by mishitting the ball. Yeah. Like, that's strike the ball. Why didn't he hit it with his right as well? Know. Never mind that. He's waiting so long. I don't know if he's more embarrassed about the finish or his decision, but either way, he deserved to be embarrassed, and he didn't help himself by pretending to be injured. The embarrassment has now just doubled, pal.
You don't want that from your big players, your superstars. Like, you know, suck it up, you missed. You have to let everybody know it's going to be all right. Ronaldo's best moment of this tournament, he just lashed a volley and pulled it wide. This was against Germany, I think. Pulled it wide, and it was terrible. Like, you know, terrible connection on his left foot. You know, it went outside the two defenders that were blocking the goals, and his face didn't change. It just didn't react in any way. Just like, you know, there's a chance gone, you know, so what? You know, give me an all chance and I'll score. And like, that's what you want. Like, that's what players feed off, and that's what they need to see from their big players. They don't need to see Mbappe blowing the fucking best chance and it hasn't scored in the tournament, and then he's over holding his leg. You sort of touched on it. What would he have gotten injured by there? You know, like, nobody believed that he was injured, so it's just a sorry sight for everybody.
Yeah, and he's forgetting that there's just hundreds of camera angles trained on him at all times, never mind when he's got the ball. We can all see what happened there, Killian. No one's being fooled here.
How impressed were you at the Swiss goalkeeper, by the way, Jan Sommer, waiting for the goal line check before he started celebrating his penalty save that knocked out the world champions in the round of 16? Like, he's just saved the penalty to put out France. They're Switzerland, big rivalry. And he's telling everybody to calm down. Let's wait and see what the linesman's saying. Let's wait and see what the referee's saying. Now we can celebrate. Fuck, I've never seen composure like that in my life.
I wasn't impressed. I was too annoyed. I thought when I saw him doing that means he's definitely off his line.
Mbappe started looking around as well for help, thinking, oh God, maybe I'll get another chance.
The last thing Mbappe wanted there was to have another fucking penalty. There was no way in the world Mbappe was scoring that as well. He's had such a bad tournament, and he was having such a bad game, topped off by that miss that we're talking about there. And I thought it was surprising to see him wandering up to hit one, especially because everyone else was so composed.
Yeah.
Everybody, all the Swiss players, all the French players, they were just drilling them into the bottom corner or into the top corner. Most of the penalties were completely unsavable. And then Mbappe just hits it exactly where Sommer wants it. Slightly higher, maybe it wasn't a dreadful penalty, but it was bad. It was nowhere near the side, and that summed him up.
Last one. How will Gareth Southgate view today? Now, England are through to the last eight. They've beaten Germany. But Jack Grealish played well. So is this a good day or a bad day for Gareth Southgate?
Gareth Southgate is going to feel completely justified. He's going to feel completely justified in what he did. He held Grealish back until they needed him to win the game. That was the game plan. Keep it at 0-0 until the 70th minute and then go and win it, which is fucking stupid. If you think you can get Jack Grealish on the pitch to go win the game in 20 minutes, have him on for 90. Let's see what he can fucking do then. If Jack Grealish can be responsible for two goals in 20 minutes, I'm no mathematician, Conan, but I reckon he could have created 9 chances during that game.
It's always a weird philosophy, isn't it, from these managers? Like, yeah, we'll keep it tight and then we'll try and win the game when there's way less time to try and win the game. You know, if you try and win the game for 90 minutes, you give yourself a better chance of actually winning the game. And you'll worry the other team too. You won't put yourself under so much pressure. And and you know what? If you get 2-0 up, then you can take Jack Grealish off and play the way you really want to play and see it out then. And that would be way easier that way rather than risking it. Like, yeah, having it all on the line for 20 minutes to go. And it's like, I hope somebody pulls us out here. Could have just gone the Scotland way where the team were settled and defending and like the other side were rattled because they weren't used to getting chances. It's a big ask of a team who haven't really been threatening. But then Jack Grealish always answers.
That's it. That's what Jack Grealish does. Jack Grealish gets onto a football pitch. He lights it up. He creates chances and he wins games for whatever team he's playing for.
I'm reminded of Liam Neeson's scene in Taken. For any Man City representative out there, the rate just went up 10%. We'll see you on Saturday. That wind is calling my name, and I won't
wait, or I'll never get on. Your arrogance offends me, and for that the rate just went up 10%.